Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I'm your host, Gabe Moses. Episode number 10. Here we are, halfway through season 1. It feels good to be back, and I have so much in store for you. I'm excited to be exploring something new with this episode. This one is dedicated to Camille A. Brown, a beautiful black choreographer. I am thrilled to delve into an art form I have not yet touched. However, I don't believe I can do Miss Brown's career justice without showing you her amazing talents in dance and choreography. So before we get into facts, I would just like to say that everyone needs to get familiar with her work. The only way to apply what I'll be discussing is to watch her work. It is beyond compare. So without further ado, let's get into it. Camille A. Brown was born on December 11th in 1979. She was raised in Queens, New York. I do not have much background on her upbringing, but I do know she struggled to find her place in school due to bullies who made fun of her high-pitched voice, so much so that she was afraid to speak amongst her peers. Brown would soon find her voice through dance. This was a way she was able to communicate without being criticized. She was born with this gift. She grew up training at the Bernice Johnson Dance Center and the Caroline DeVore Dance Center. In 1997, Brown graduated from LaGuardia High School of the Performing Arts, where her focus was dance. While she was in high school, Brown also attended the Ailey School through a scholarship. Her educational journey would continue at the University of North Carolina School for the Arts. She graduated with a BFA in 2001 as a contemporary dance major. She received many awards for her performances and talents as a dancer and choreographer. From 2001 to 2007, Brown was a member of Ronald K. Brown's Evidence, a dance company. This company strives to promote understanding of the human experience in African diaspora through dance and storytelling, and to provide sensory connections to history and tradition through music, movement, and spoken word. Just a year before she would leave this company, Brown would be the founder and artistic director of her own dance company called Camille A. Brown and Dancers. In 2006, CABD took off. Their mission is to travel the world while telling stories of race and identity to diverse audiences. Here is Brown's artistic statement. She says, and I quote, "As a choreographer, I am interested in the space between dance and theater where interdisciplinary work defies category and takes flight. Music and rhythm are the main driving forces of my work. Informed by my music background as a clarinetist, I create choreography that utilizes musical composition as storytelling. I am interested in telling stories, historical and personally based, and am fascinated to tying history to my personal experiences and bringing those things to life. By creating a vocabulary that fuses African, hip-hop, jazz, modern, tap, ballet, theater, original music compositions, and African-American social dances, my work often provides a platform to educate people about their origins while also exploring universal themes through movement. My company and I aim to present authentic performances that foster cultural and educational dialogues among audiences and local communities while instilling a sense of curiosity and appreciation for the live arts experience in a social and aesthetic context. We strive to build young and scholarly advocates who will help build appreciation for the field of contemporary dance within communities of color, as well as develop our sphere of influence for cultural dialogue and reflection. Through our work, we seek to speak to people, make them feel good, provoke, engage, and inspire." Unquote. Throughout the next few years, Brown would continue to lead her company and choreograph beautiful pieces such as her trilogy on race, culture, and identity. In 2012, she won the Bessie Award for outstanding performance in her piece called Mr. Tol E. Ronsay. This is what Brown says about this piece. And I quote, "In crafting this work, I wanted to embody the humor and perseverance of black performers, as well as examine historic and current stereotypes. What does outside perception look like? The grotesqueness. Since this work was created, we've learned that white people donning blackface is not a thing of the past. And since we first premiered Mr. Tol E. Ronsay, there have been many instances of black people being killed because of these distorted perceptions that have deep and specific places of origin in our history. This piece is about perception." Unquote. Soon enough, Brown's brilliant choreography would lead her to tackling plays and musicals on Broadway. We'll talk about some of these right after this. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. Tick, tick, boom. A cabin in the sky. A winter's tale. Once. And Toni Stone are just a few titles where Brown has had the privilege of showcasing her talents. She says she has become a better choreographer after working on so many theatrical shows. She is forced to stay immersed in the realm of storytelling. Let's take a look at some of Brown's most recognized contributions to the theater over the last few years. In 2012, Brown made her Broadway debut with a black lead cast revival of A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams. Brown was known for bringing soul and rhythm to this classic piece. In 2015, Brown was the choreographer for a new musical called Stagger Lee, which premiered in Dallas, Texas. The show follows mythical characters in their quest to achieve the American dream. The music stemmed from Joplin to R&B and hip-hop. Theater Jones News says, "Each dancer attains an individual style as they execute a sexy cakewalk or a jubilant jitterbug, while as a whole, offering a living manual of moves from disco and funk." In 2017, Brown returned to Broadway with the revival of Once on This Island, a story about how love can bring different backgrounds and classes of people together. Brown's choreography guided the story through her use of celebratory movements from various cultures. With this production, Brown was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Choreography. In 2018, Brown's choreography would be seen on television screens across the world. Her work was seen in the live television special of NBC's Jesus Christ Superstar, Live in Concert. 2019 would be a big year for Brown. "First off, I was able to see her choreography live in person when I attended the Public Theater's Shakespeare in the Park performance of Much Ado About Nothing, directed by Kenny Leon. Brown's choreography made the play and Shakespeare's text come alive. Line dancing and West African-inspired movement are performed by the ensemble in different moments of the play. It was exhilarating." Also in 2019, Brown choreographed Porgy and Bess at the Metropolitan Opera. Later in the year, she also worked on a moving production of For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. The Zora Medium says, "Brown does not provide the performers with choreography. Instead, she provides the players with options, new ways to deliver the spoken word that requires them to be deeply connected to their bodies." And of course, the show that earned Brown her first Tony nomination, Choir Boy. You may remember Choir Boy from last episode, number 9, with Terrell Alvin McCraney. Well, to end this episode, we'll be hearing from Camille A. Brown herself, as she briefly maps out her life from from finding her purpose as a young performer to becoming a Tony-nominated choreographer. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Camille A. Brown, and I'm Tony-nominated as a choreographer for Choir Boy. I mean, I have a small voice. I've always had a small voice, so, 20 years ago, it was even higher than it is now. And I didn't really talk a lot because I was always teased, so I felt very insecure. Movement was always a way for me to express myself and to communicate to other people how I was feeling. I've always liked putting things together, putting shows together for my family. You know, we have family gatherings, and then, you know, I would tell them at 8 o'clock, we're gonna have a show. So that was probably torture for them. So I always loved to do that. I just didn't know it was choreography. My mom loves dance. It was something that she always loved. She's a retired social worker, but she was actually the one that introduced me to musicals. Jelly's Last Jam, Damn Yankees, Chorus Line, Bring In the Noise, Bring In the Funk. So it's because of her that I'm here. I definitely loved it. I just didn't know if it was a profession. In school, you're taught teacher, lawyer, doctor. I went to LaGuardia High School and the Ailey School. From high school to college, I felt like there was gonna be something new, a new experience. I had been struggling with body issues and weight, and I felt like, okay, well, this is a new atmosphere, new state. That's not gonna follow me, and it totally did. It was heartbreaking, and I wanted to transfer immediately. And I told my mom, and she said, okay, well, you just got there, so let's finish out the semester and then have a conversation about transferring. But in the meantime, you have to find something that you love that you can stay focused on. Trish Casey, who was my first teacher at NCSA, she was actually asking us, what do you think about moving, and what is your personality? And I had never thought of it like that. I didn't necessarily know then that I wanted to be a choreographer, because I just thought, okay, this is something to keep me, you know. And I mean, I graduated, and there weren't a lot of representations of Black women, Black female choreographers. I knew Marlise Yerby and Diane McIntyre and Katherine Dunham, but I had to do the work to see them. Choir Boy specifically, the movements that are in the show are rooted in Juba dance, which is an African-American social dance that started during slavery. The enslaved Africans were not allowed to have instruments on a lot of the plantations because there was fear that they would be communicating to each other through those signals. The enslaved Africans used their bodies to make sounds, and that your body is an instrument as well, so they use that to communicate. Also, step, which is an African-American social dance, which is also connected to Juba. And I was also thinking about South African gumboot dance, which is comes from South Africa, and it's the miners were wearing boots, and they weren't allowed to speak to each other during their work. So in order to communicate, in order to keep the rhythm, they would start making noise, very much like Juba dance. You are doing something that is culturally specific in front of people who may not necessarily understand. Are you gonna water it down, or are you gonna tell it like it is? Trip Coleman, the director, and Terrell Alvin McCraney, I mean, they really gave me the space to do that, because it's a play. So they could have said, well, this is a play, they don't dance, what are you doing? But they didn't. I never thought I would be here. As a Black woman, the last Black woman nominated in this category was Marlise Yerby for Rent in 1996. So it's been 23 years. So that means a lot. It means that I have an opportunity to thank Marlise and Diane and Katherine Dunham, who paved the way for me and other Black female choreographers. But also, I hope that this gives me a platform where a young Black girl like myself looks and sees a reflection of herself and goes, oh, I can choreograph too. I can make my own dances. I may be getting teased, but I can create my own voice. So that's what it means. I mean, it means a lot of things, but I just think about those. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.